Well, look at you. You made it back for another episode of Common Sense Ohio. It is the end of July, and we're corn sweating it up.
Unreal.
Apparently, it's a thing, because enough news outlets make it so that it is. So anyway, if you haven't heard anything about corn sweat, check it out. Google it up. I'm not going to go into it. I don't know if it makes a difference or not in regards to our weather, but apparently it's a thing that when the news is slow, we talk about sweating corn in Ohio. So do remember to, and I know we always talk about this at the end of the podcast, but remember to share, like, agree with what we've got going on. Seriously, do you like what you heard today? Share it along. If you don't, share it along and say these guys are idiots or or that, hey, they're the best thing since sliced bread. Whatever. We just love the feedback, if nothing else. We also always have typically an open chair. So if you think you can, as Steve would say, you got the chops to be on the show, yeah, come on. And let's talk about a specific subject that we maybe haven't covered or haven't covered well enough. We'd love to hear from you. All that contact information is in the podcast show notes. But yeah, Ohio's making the news, not necessarily in a great way. We're gonna cover that. Yeah, as most of you probably heard, a little bit of a shuffle, jazz shuffle going on in Cincinnati, where a little bit of racial tension turns into fisticuffs.
Well, yeah, so we could call it a jazz festival smackdown.
Smackdown. Yeah.
I mean, so they have charged five people so far, not releasing the names, at least as of the last time I checked, but they might be out there now. So the police have charged five of the people involved in this melee that occurred downtown at following a Reds game and the Jazz Festival in Cincinnati. And it appears to be basically Caucasian people that I guess one guy challenged somebody else, a black guy, white guy challenged a black guy to some kind of a fight. Words were exchanged, and it looked like it was going to dissolve and nothing was going to happen. And then they squared off, and I guess the white guy slapped, lightly slapped, it is said. I haven't seen the video of this slap, the black guy. And then all hell broke loose. He ends up, the white guy, on the ground. and basically, there's people going wild on him once he's on the ground, kicking, you know, doing the power slams and all of this while his head's on the concrete. And, you know, regardless of what we think about, you know, the races and the coverage and all that, as a criminal incident, you know, you can't hit other people, period. And you can't touch other people without their permission, and you could call somebody a cracker or the N-word or whatever racial epithet you want. That does not give you the excuse, no matter what your race, white or black or green or purple, you don't have the right to hit people because somebody called you a name, okay? Yeah. That's and if you're drunk and it's 3 a.m, as this is said to have been 2-3 a.m, none of that matters. Whether you're inebriated or whether, you know, your parents were mean to you when you were a little kid or whatever excuse they want to give, you know, the shooter in New York or the rioters in Cincinnati, none of that matters. You're not allowed to hit other people. You're not allowed to take their life. You're not allowed to, you know, present any danger to them physically. So the police have charged at least five people, and they say that they're continuing the investigation. I would not be surprised if the guy, if this is true, if the white guy slapped the black guy, I think the white guy's going to get charged.
Right.
And I think the black folks that jumped in and went overboard and, you know, possibly could have killed this guy when he's down on the pavement, I think they're going to get charged if they can identify them. And certainly the guy who sucker punched the single mom who was trying to break up the fight ends up with blood coming out of her mouth and she's unconscious. I think him and the ladies and the other people that are said to have knocked her out and then, you know, started pounding on her, if those facts are correct, they're going to get charged. So, you know, I think cooler heads have to prevail. It's a shame that Cincinnati, which is on the cusp, I heard the FOP guy in Cincinnati describe Cincinnati and Hamilton County as right on the teetering, you know, right on the precipice of going either to a full woke city where the judges, he said, half the judges are not putting people in jail for violent crimes or letting them off. And the other judges are still doing the traditional sentencing. And he said, basically, in his opinion, white or black, you know, green or purple, doesn't matter the color. His point of view is that it's a lack of enforcement of the law and equal application, and that there have to be consequences for violence. And I couldn't agree more with that. I think when you have a city, whether it's Seattle or Portland or these other cities where there have been riots and, you know, buildings burned down and people beaten and cops shot even, and then they get a very light sentence or they're not even charged because we make excuses for them, I think that leads to more violence. There has to be a consequence.
Yeah, I agree. And also, I know there was comments made about even just the participation level of everybody recording it on their phone and whooping it up and such. I think there has to be some consequences to that as well, too, because it kind of built up the fury around it, you know, to make it theatrical when it comes down to it. So, yeah, there are some issues that, you know, need to be definitely addressed. And sadly, it always seems to be this tipping point that things start to get changed. Maybe this is the tipping point that it finally is. There's an awareness of there's a problem of you know, working the law the way it's supposed to be worked. I don't necessarily agree with bigger names around the country you know, making comments on this without letting the dust settle. It's just like, you know, we don't know what happened yet fully. I don't know how you can make a comment on anything without knowing the full story. We did a good job right here. We state the facts. We know what's going on, but there's still a lot to be coming out of it. And it's just like, come out with a solution rather than just say it's a problem. You know, it's lawlessness. I mean, I think a big fell swoop of, I don't really appreciate, and I get why J.D. Vance wants to say some stuff in regards to how a few cities in Ohio has some law problems, but it's that, I didn't appreciate the black eye for Columbus. Yeah, Columbus has some problems, but Cincinnati has problems. But I don't know. It's just that let's the dust settle and figure this out first before you have to make a comment within, you know, X amount of hours of an incident to a certain degree.
I think, you know, the one thing that some of the people have been talking about, like, I think Bernie Marino and mm-hmm. Jason Whitlock and other national players, the one thing that I think they're right about is the mob mentality.
Yeah, yeah.
When you get people, you know, jacked up on alcohol or whatever they're smoking or whatever, and you get a mob going, people start acting in a mob. I mean, you know, that's how lynchings occur. That's mm-hmm. how, you know, buildings get burned down. That's how, you know, university offices get occupied. You get people doing things in a mob that they individually would not do.
Well, it's proven with the January 6th. Tons of interviews ton of people came in and they got energized by the mob.
I don't know. That's complicated too.
But you know, to a point.
You had police guards letting people into the building.
Right.
But waving them through the door. So
sure.
It's complicated.
It is. No.
But I would point to other mob activities that are, yeah, that are a lot, I guess, more easily digested, that, you know, you have people say, hey, that guy over there, you know, did something to a girl, and a posse goes out, drags a guy out of his house and hangs him, you know, in a tree. Or people do things in these demonstrations going down the street, and they're thinking, well, I got a mask on, I'm wearing a hoodie, and why don't I just throw a rock through this window or start a car on fire? And, you know, before you know it, people that would never do that, you know, on their own, but because they're surrounded by 100 or 1,000 or 50 other people, they feel this, you know, anonymous identity that now they're part of a big group, and everybody's chanting to go ahead and do it. And before you know it, you know, somebody shot somebody or somebody beat somebody up or whatever. And maybe they would not typically do that, you know, as an individual actor. So mobs are very dangerous, regardless of what their politics are, if there's even politics. Sometimes it's just a pure...
It's celebratory. I mean, we've seen that after, you know, college football games.
Oh, sure.
Oh, my gosh, you know.
Yeah. Burning down a neighborhood
up
in Chicago because back in the day, you know... Michael Jordan and the guys, you know, won the NBA tournament. So let's burn down the south side of Chicago. It's like crazy.
Crazy, exactly.
You know, so at any rate, I think some of the calls against the mob mentality are valid. I think that there is some kind of knee-jerk thing going on in some of the media. The Cincinnati Enquirer, for example, the next day didn't really focus on the incident. Their headline was about how news of the incident and opinions about the incident spread like wildfire on Twitter. So their headline was all about Elon Musk and these other people posting on Twitter about their various theories behind this incident. And I thought, wait a minute, this thing happened in your city, Cincinnati Enquirer. Why don't you talk about the police chief and the mayor? And about the investigation by the police, you would think that's what they talk about. Instead, they're talking about the political spin. Within 24 hours of the incident, they're already, you know, people are taking sides and speculating about, you know, the intentions of individual people. And I don't know what is, I guess until... people are charged and there's a trial, we're not really going to understand what the evidence is and what the motivations are. But it is being investigated, I am told, by the DOJ, Federals, the FBI, as a hate crime, meaning the mob going overboard. You know, instead of restraining this guy who slaps somebody and say, hey, we're calling 911. We're going to, you know, police are going to come because you slap somebody. Instead of doing that, they got immediate revenge on this guy. If these are the facts, and, you know, could have killed him. I mean, you know, you sucker punch people or you kick them on the ground and certainly stomp on their head. I mean, you're talking brain injury stuff that could have happened. And maybe it did happen, so I don't know.
But
I think some of the criticisms are valid about how the mayor didn't say anything for a day, and the police chief, to Brett's point, indicated that they only received out of that whole crowd, they received one 911 call, which is crazy.
Yeah,
you know, people are on their phones taping this stuff, but nobody's calling 911 but one individual. And thank God they did.
Yeah.
But I think the police chief has some things to answer to. For example, it is said, and I believe that their preliminary story is out there, that downtown, following a Reds game and a jazz festival, there were two Cincinnati policemen or women on duty in downtown Cincinnati. I don't know how you have these big, you know, civic events in a major city downtown, and you have the budget is so tight, you only have two officers on duty. So they, you know, I've been to a lot of, you know, like our fireworks show here in Columbus. There's a cop on every block.
A lot.
I mean, I don't get it. So they have a Reds game, they have a Cincinnati Jazz Festival, and you would think the police would be on bicycles, in cars, you know, circulating. And it is said there were two police officers on duty that representing the city, not, you know, hire a cops.
Right.
So
is the Jazz Festival in Cincinnati, is that a Cincinnati event or is that a private event?
You know? No, that's a civic event.
Civic event.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's every year they have
okay.
that.
Okay. I wasn't sure who runs that and such. So you would think on top of that, if it's a civic event,
honestly,
they have the budget to put dollars into cops' pockets to be down there for OT or, you know, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, it's really ridiculous.
Hopefully that's wrong. But at the same time, there's a problem.
there's a problem. I mean, you know, the idea is to have a strong presence to prevent these kinds of incidents and to intervene should they occur. So,
well, and even for the attendees that are out of town to feel safe.
Sure.
You know, if there's a problem, they know they can hail down a cop and have a, and I'm not talking about a problem of somebody coming up and trying to, you know, hit you or something like that. Maybe you're not feeling well. I mean, whatever the case might be, you just feel that at least there's presence there, that if something goes on, they're within a minute away. And you feel safe within this event. I don't think that's asking too much, quite frankly, as an outsider coming in. Or even if you're, a resident of Cincinnati, if you want to feel safe in your own city.
Yeah, you know, there were riots in the Over the Rhine area of Cincinnati following the George Floyd incident. You know, like a lot of cities had riots, and it destroyed a lot of inner city businesses. And that, you know, of course, that happened, I don't know, 10 years ago, whenever the hell that happened. So Cincinnati has had some real racial tensions, and there have been a lot of racially diverse people on council and as mayor of Cincinnati and as police and head of the fire department and all the different offices. There is the Underground Railroad Museum right there on the banks of the river in Cincinnati. And in fact, when I was a little kid growing up there, one of our Boy Scout adventures was to go visit some of the physical sites along the river where largely it was anti-slavery white folks receiving across the river from Kentucky former slaves or slaves running away from the farms and plantations where they were working where they were enslaved in the South. And coming across the Ohio River from Kentucky to freedom. And so to me, the big overwhelming story in Cincinnati was one of pride that this was a city where black and white folks got along well historically. And I've always had that opinion. I have several friends involved in politics of both races and other races. The current mayor of Cincinnati is an Asian American. And so it's a beautiful story of opportunity, diversity, you know, great music, boxers, veterans of all the wars that the U.S. has been engaged in. Lots of heroes in Cincinnati of all races and backgrounds, and to see the city become divided and to see it amped up through the media is very, very worrisome and disappointing to me personally.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think a lot of people in Cincinnati feel the same way. And so what is going on, in my opinion, is going to be a further hollowing out, you know, like has happened in Cleveland, like has happened in many cities, like Chicago, where you have essentially a donut hole in the center of the city, against all of the efforts of urban renewal to get people to move downtown. We got this going on in Columbus, where the Short North people have millions invested in a lot of these properties, beautiful condos, houses that have been rehabbed. and the crime is way up, and the police feel so underappreciated that, and so afraid of them going to prison if they intervene, that they are basically waiting until all the shooting stops, and then they go in and write up a report instead of actually responding to an active crime scene. They're kind of doing the blue flu number, and I think a lot of it is because we, the people, are not backing the police like we should, and we don't have a law and order mentality. And that's not a black problem, and it's not a white problem. That is a people problem.
Mm-hmm.
That is us failing to demand of our public servants that they enforce the law evenly and without prejudice against anybody who breaks the law. So,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, I agree. Yeah. It's all, yeah. Hopefully, well, we'll hear more details. It's always that I guess I look at it differently now, working with you and Steve now over the last couple of years, like, okay, what transpired before the tape was rolling on the phones? And hopefully we get a better story, although we do know a little bit, of course, you know, that it was instigated by the Caucasian gentleman. But at the same time, okay, it's always interesting to hear more and more that ramped up to get a better picture of what's going on. So, but you had, this has been your backyard, and sadly, it's a story that just doesn't seem to be positive. It keeps going backwards. Intel.
Yeah,
we've talked about this quite a bit on this show about its guarded history of how it even popped up in our backyard.
Right.
And now years and years behind on development, whether by choice or by money, who knows what's going on. But you've got a little bit more about this story now. It's still developing, and what's going on with this Intel development in New Albany area.
Yeah, so, you know, Intel's in the middle of this gigantic factory that they're building in Licking County, and some of the annexation of that land into New Albany, the city of New Albany, not all of it, but a bunch of it. And this, it turns out that AI chip making is happening so fast, and the technology is emerging so quickly, that this factory is designed to build a certain type of chip that is already largely said to be obsolete. And so Intel is now focusing on other factories that can build this latest super chip for AI. And this brand new plant hasn't even opened, it's not fully built, is already said to be excess to needs, that it produces, that it's designed to produce a chip. And for what, I'm no expert, but apparently the factory cannot be easily reconfigured to produce this new type of AI chip. And they talk about, you know, level 14 and level 8 chips and all of this, you know, gibberish to me. But all I know is the CEO of Intel says, well, we have other factories that we need to prioritize over this. This particular factory in Ohio that we're just, you know, now building is going to be producing the wrong kind of chips for the marketplace. And, you know, oops, you know, it's kind of like building a factory to make horse, you know, make buggy whips and covered wagons. And, you know, here's Henry Ford coming out with a car. And it would be like the Conestoga Wagon Company saying, oh, well, thanks, Jobs, Ohio. You gave us, you know, tens of millions or hundreds of millions of dollars in various concessions and direct grants. And guess what? We may never open this plant. We're slowing down construction, and it's very murky about what that building will ever, if it is ever going to be used by Intel. They have since sold their interest in that project to a consortium of which they're still part of. But now there's other owners of this project besides Intel, and it seems to me that they are slowly backing out of it as a corporation, and their full commitment to Ohio of you know, 2,500 new jobs and 800,000 new people moving to Licking County, and all of the sales job that was done on the Ohio taxpayers that our attorney general says we cannot claw back the money for because the contract with Intel was written so poorly, or maybe deliberately, so that the funds could never be clawed back should they fail to follow through on their commitment, makes me upset as a taxpayer. And it should make other people upset, because there's a blight out there on this former agricultural land. All these roads and service lines and big ugly, you know, utility towers and all of this stuff that you cannot imagine. The traffic jam of cement trucks and gravel trucks that are rolling through this little tiny community of Johnstown in western Licking County right now, even with this project slowing down, it's just unbelievable. And they're causing accidents and they're ruining roads. And, you know, the schools are in flux. Should we build new schools for all these expected new people coming? Yes or no? Yeah, it's hard to pop up a new grade school overnight, or to cancel a new grade school that's half, maybe that's half built or half funded. So things are a mess. And I lay a lot of this at the feet of Jobs Ohio, which is super secretive. And we don't know all of the ins and outs of it, because they're not able to be audited by the state of Ohio. We actually don't know a lot about the financial dealings of how Intel was lured to Ohio and what we as Ohio taxpayers exactly gave away, because Jobs Ohio runs the liquor concession in Ohio, and that's how it's funded. And then there's no audit about how they spend.
Yeah, I
it's outrageous.
It is. I think an Ohio gubernatorial candidate needs to latch on to this.
You're listening to Vivek? You know, hey, Mr. Vivek, and whoever your Democratic opponent is, you should be latching on to this issue.
Because if Intel goes tits up,
it's a white elephant that the taxpayers are being stuck with.
That could
with.
Be a turning point that opens the doors to find out what is Jobs Ohio's contracts, whatever it looks like. How is this thing being run?
Yeah.
Because that, if nothing else, I think that'd make a great standing point. At least it holds some feet to the fire.
Right.
That, you know, what kind of contract did we write here that this thing is now 10 years behind schedule? How could Intel, I don't know, pretend to understand how Intel is run, or these large corporations building buildings that have to change basically overnight when technology changes or advances and such. Okay, Intel's been in this a while.
Yeah.
You think that they would know, but they can modify their other plants, their other facilities. So why can't you do that here? Build something to modify. I mean, build a shell. I don't pretend to understand this.
Me neither.
But it's that, but there's not an industry in the world that stays static, especially technology.
Exactly.
That stuff changes fast.
Right.
So what were you building out there? What are you building out there that can't be changed within a time scale to keep it going? Or was it just one thing you were going to build, you took the money, and you're going to run?
Yeah.
And we don't know because we don't see the contract.
And the thing is that Jobs Ohio, as we covered in a previous show, has now granted an amount that's double what they gave Intel to Anduril, which is a defense contractor that's going to move into the Central Ohio area, allegedly, right? Mm-hmm. And we don't know what that contract says. And it's not able to be audited either, because Jobs Ohio was set up deliberately to conceal from public scrutiny what they're doing to bring in, supposedly, you know, like their name implies, Jobs Ohio, to bring in jobs for Ohioans to take, good paying jobs That's the thesis behind Jobs Ohio. But why the lack of transparency? It is said to be the only development agency in the country of its kind, where it was deliberately set up to bypass the media, bypass public scrutiny, and bypass a public audit, which is unheard of. And yet that's what we have.
Right.
And it's like the people in Ohio, we're the dummies. We're the people who can't handle reality, so they're going to hide it from us, because if we knew the truth, we'd be outraged. Well, if they think we would be outraged, then it seems to me that's a case for transparency,
right?
If there ever was one.
Right. And I think I understand some of the reasoning that they want to, you know, retain a competitive edge when they're fighting other states or other cities, whatever the case might be. But once the deal is done,
right,
we should be able to see what that deal was.
Yeah. During negotiations,
I get
you know,
it.
If you got to keep it confidential at that point.
Yeah.
But eventually, at some point, and I don't mean 100 years from now. I mean, like, you know.
While the ink is drying.
We should know the deal.
Yes.
And, you know.
So you know, as we've always talked about, what stays in the dark pretty much it stays in the dark, but you're making bad deals because of it.
Yeah.
We have to have some accountability. Like, okay, you can negotiate in private, but we want to know what's going on after it's all said and done to hold you accountable. It's like, that was a bad deal. That's a bad deal.
Right.
When you have
the Attorney General of Ohio say that he's looked at the contract and there's no way to claw back money from a bad actor or an incompetent actor or whatever kind of actor you want to say Intel is, if they do not follow through on their commitment, and the Attorney General of Ohio says there is nothing he can do because of how the contract was written, that's a problem right there. So who did write the contract? Who is responsible for the fact that Ohio citizens have this white elephant out there in the middle of a farm field? And the people who sold their land, a lot of them had inside knowledge. The skids were greased ahead of time. And New Albany basically was able to annex this by just rubber, like one hearing, okay, we approve the annexation, rubber stamp it through. All of this happened in, you know, a 1-2-3 quick succession of events that the public really had no ability to make any public comments, to object to anything, or to sit down and study the proposal before it was approved. It was all bam, 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 it's done. And then the citizens of Ohio read about it in the newspaper as a done deal. Well, that's not right. And what it's done to little old ladies and old men that are out there in their homes on fixed incomes, having to sell their property because they can't pay, you know, their property taxes because the valuation's doubled or tripled. Well, now, if the building never gets finished and there's just this ugly shell going to sit out there for the next 30, 40 years, it was all for nothing. And these people got shoved out of their homes, and everybody's valuation on their property went double or triple. And they're paying enormous amounts of property taxes now that they weren't paying before. It is truly a tragedy if that's how this is going to wind up.
Yeah.
And the people had no say. And their elected officials, many of which, and this can be documented, you know, it's not a secret which families owned what farmland and which families had political connections and sometimes even relatives as trustees or commissioners or city council people, and there was a lot of foreknowledge by certain people that made millions and millions and millions of dollars selling land for Intel, and they're gone. They're in Florida or the Bahamas, or they bought land cheaply elsewhere in Ohio and continued their farming operations. And none of that's right either.
Yeah. I would think this whole situation is going to make a few people nervous. I would think Husted's got to be a little bit nervous about this.
Yeah,
because it sticks to him like glue.
Oh, he was up to his weight. Him and DeWine.
DeWine's kind of done. I mean,
once he
serves his term, he's done.
He's a lame duck.
But Husted's got a future, and Husted, along with any you know, additional, as I mentioned, gubernatorial candidates, they need to jump on this. I mean, Husted could be a hero out of this versus looking pretty stupid.
He was
out
there.
He's got the power now to get it done.
Yeah, he was out there with the silver-plated shovel with President Biden on when they broke ground for the facility. You know, he was happy to take the bow.
Yeah.
You know, and Governor DeWine was out there. And, you know, this is not a Republican versus Democrat issue. All their hands are dirty.
Yep.
This is something where it was a bipartisan effort, you know, to get all the applause and, you know, get all the recognition that there's going to be, you know, tens of thousands of construction jobs and then 2,500 permanent jobs in that factory. Hey, man, we were sold a bill of goods, very possibly, and we should know all the details and, you know, let the chips fall where they may, no pun intended.
Right, exactly. There you go, all the way around, exactly. So, yeah.
We're going to follow this story very closely.
Yeah.
I can tell you that.
Well, and like I mentioned, too, and I bring Husted into this, that he, you know, it's not just an Ohio thing. This is a national situation. So he can now stick his fingers into it and maybe make the needle move. So, you know, on a larger scale, we focus on Ohio. We typically hit some national news, and Russiagate's coming back. You know, in regards to what we thought was kind of a, I don't know, I don't mean done, but now talk of, was it a hoax?
Yeah.
You know, what's going on here? That's, you know, new notes and memos have been floating around going, who is involved with this? Was it really happening? So, yeah, you've got some details on that. What's going on?
Well, the director of National Intelligence, or the DNI, a former presidential candidate for the Democratic Party, Tulsi Gabbard, who, you know, was famously in those debates with Hillary Clinton and other candidates. She is now the DNI in the Trump administration, and she has surfaced memos, one of which there were only five copies of in existence, and there was one that they were able to do dredge out of the records. And then the chief of the CIA, John Ratcliffe, and Pam Bondi, the attorney general at DOJ, the head of the FBI, Kash Patel, all of these people are saying that they have memos that they have sent criminal referrals to lawyers at the DOJ to consider filing criminal charges against people like James Clapper and John Brennan, who may have perjured themselves in testimony before the House and the Senate committees looking into this Russia allegations that the entire claim that Trump was working with Putin to steal the 2016 election was a hoax. And, you know, we've known for a long time that the Hillary Clinton campaign hired Christopher Steele to write this very inventive report. And, you know, it's filled with all kinds of colorful stories about what's, you know, Donald Trump supposedly did in hotel rooms in Russia and all this other stuff. And it turned out that Robert Mueller did a 3-year investigation as a special prosecutor, and he reported back to the Nation back in, I think it was 2019 or 2020, that none of the Steele report was true, that there was nothing there to the Russia hoax. And so people have been demanding some kind of consequences for people who cooked this story up, because it did consume about 3 years of the Trump administration. People, you know, if you remember late night comedy during this period, you know, you had Colbert and Jimmy Kimmel and, you know, all the people that used to do comedy were instead doing news reports that Trump was definitely going to get impeached and he was going to go to prison and this and that and the other thing. And it was all bullshit. And so, you know, who did this? It'd be one thing if Hillary cooked up Oppo research and did a dirty campaign trick. But to find out that people in office, like James Comey, head of the FBI, and Clapper and Brennan, and now they're saying President Obama himself was at the top rejecting reports by the FBI that there was no truth to the memo, and he would say, I'm not satisfied with that. Go back. I want you to make a different conclusion. Well, that's in essence directing, you know, the FBI to be political. I mean, yeah, there's no other way to read that memo when they come back and say, sir, we've looked into this and it's just not true. Well, then I want other people to look into it and I want a different conclusion. That's a smoking gun. And apparently those kinds of memos are what's at stake here. And President Obama has said his hands are clean and he's probably not going to get charged, even if any of this is validated, because he's a sitting president, and basically you cannot charge a president, as we know from the Trump Supreme Court decision, a sitting president cannot be charged with a crime for actions that he or she may have done while president. They can certainly be impeached, and if you recall, they did impeach Trump after he left office. It was the craziest thing in the world. Yeah. And that was January 6th based, right? And Supreme Court Justice John Roberts didn't even bother showing up because it was a bogus impeachment. So I guess the House could do another political impeachment of Obama, even though he's out of office. Yeah. But short of
well,
that.
Well, and you know, but you know. But presidents are concerned about their legacy. So, yeah. I mean, I could see where.
Doesn't look good.
It doesn't. You know, presidents want to be remembered. We tend to have a short-term memory on the bad things. We remember the good stuff about
right.
presidents.
Yeah.
And no president wants to be remembered yeah. for something bad. So, you know, if nothing else, his legacy is tarnished, whether it sticks or not, or if anybody loves, or
yeah.
you know, it is what it is.
Right.
But yeah, it's an interesting development on who will take the sword. Now, Manny's yeah. going to be taking the sword.
Yeah.
And just
kind of like Ollie North did.
Yeah, right.
And you
he
fell on the sword and yeah. kind of protected President Reagan
yeah.
on the Iran-Contra thing. And to this day, we're not really sure if President Reagan knew of it or
yeah.
not.
Right.
Because
right.
because there were people protecting him. And, you know, the same way to a certain extent with Richard Nixon, you know, you had Gordon Liddy and John Mitchell doing a lot of dirty stuff with the Cuban plumber operation in the Watergate Hotel, right? Robbing the Democratic headquarters of documents and spying on them. And people say to this day that Nixon got involved in the cover-up, but that he did not know about the direction to break into the DNC offices. And so there's always going to be this fuzziness about what did the yeah. president know and when did he know it and all
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you know, you make this comment about the fuzziness piece of this. You know, I think we all can have our suspicions and maybe agree. There's probably some tampering of the election of some point, you know, manipulation of social media by foreign interests.
Oh, for sure.
For sure.
And I don't think anybody debates that.
Exactly.
Russia definitely interfered via social media. So did China,
yeah.
right?
And
no question.
And sadly, we have to stick it to somebody locally, you know, or, you know, in the government and such. But the stuff's happening, and it's almost like the shiny object over here looking at, but it's like, the real stuff's happening here, and we're not taking care of it.
Well, you know? I mean, there were Pulitzer Prizes awarded to, like, the New York Times and Washington Post and CNN. You know, people got Emmys and Pulitzers for supposedly being so brave and being so accurate reporting on the Russia Gate thing as if Trump really did it. So people are getting – they were being spoon-fed information – by people who wanted to tarnish and to slow down the actions of the Trump administration once he was in office. The idea was to take away his political support. And, you know, if you take people like Paul Ryan, who was the Speaker of the House, he did not work with Trump. Now, he was a fellow Republican. And when Trump was trying, whether you liked Obamacare or not, that's not the point. The point is Trump had an agenda to either modify or repeal Obamacare. And he probably would have gotten that done because at the time the Republicans had the House and the Senate. And yet Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan would not work with him because they were convinced he was guilty because of the media. That somehow he had something to do with Putin, which is incredibly ridiculous, but on its face. But because of the scandal accusations, Trump did not get a lot of what he wanted to get done in his first term. Mm-hmm. Remember, he wanted to build the wall. And what he did was divert Defense Department funds to build the wall instead of getting it funded as a civilian project. That was Defense Department money that built that steel wall in the sections where it was done. So lots of fancy accounting had to be done because he couldn't do it straight up, even with members of his own party.
Right.
So you could say Hillary and Obama succeeded. You know, if the goal was to stymie the Trump presidency term number one, they did a great job. They did a 3-year delay tactic on him that really slowed him down.
Well, and now you want, and now if you put the pieces together, you kind of realize, okay, now you know why Trump is putting gas on the fire.
Absolutely.
And just like, because
I'm going to get stuff done.
He probably, you know, and he historically, you take a look at this, you know, you've got first two of the 4 years you're there that the votes are in your favor.
Yeah.
Things will change in 2 years. It traditionally has.
Because of the midterms.
Always does.
Yeah.
Always does. It doesn't.
I think you got to go back almost 100 years.
Right. It just does.
Yeah.
So it's no wonder every day something is coming out of his office or his mouth.
Yeah.
Pushing something or
yeah.
saying this, diverting, whatever you want to do. It's mind-boggling.
It is. It's gushing out of the White House like a fire hose.
Big time.
And whether you agree with it or not, it is remarkable the amount of activity that they have done in only 6 months so far.
I mean,
to agree or disagree, right. I'm just talking about the policy changes and the initiatives that have come out of the Trump White House is staggering.
Mm-hmm.
It's remarkable, you know, and you can almost point to almost anything, whether it's the tariffs, whether it's the border, whether it is going after illegals and deporting them, whatever topic you want to talk about, the big beautiful bill, you know, et cetera, et cetera. It's just an unbelievable fire hose of initiatives, some of which seem to be super popular, and others, I'm sure, are very controversial. Damn. To a lot of people, and that's our system. Let's debate that and, you know, and let's hash it out. But I think Brett's right on target. He got burned in his first term, and he's like, hey, man,
it's a second term mentality.
I'm going to flood the zone.
Definitely. I mean, every president that has a second term knows like, okay, this is it. I have nothing to lose because I don't have to be, I'm not going to be reelected. I've been reelected.
Yeah.
So let's just do it.
He's the quarterback, and he sent the other 10 players down the field.
Pretty much. Yeah. And he's throwing nine
footballs. I'm passing to somebody.
He's throwing nine footballs at once, too. You know, everybody out there, you know, however many you want to throw. Exactly. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
And you can't say he's paranoid because it happened.
Yeah. I know.
So, you know.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of goodwill in D.C. between the Democrats and the Republicans, and I think a lot of this is attributable to malicious actions that occurred against Trump in his first term. You know, whether or not you agree with his policies isn't the point. It's like, should the organs of government be turned against somebody during a political campaign or even while they're in office. And this is where, you know, it kind of confirms people's attributions that there's a swamp in D.C., a permanent class of bureaucrats that will protect the infrastructure at all costs, thinking these elected people come and go, but I stay in my job for 25 or 30 years, and I'm the guy who calls the shots, and they're four or five layers down in the bureaucracy.
Yeah.
And you know, look at him. He keeps getting the approval by the Supreme Court to fire almost everybody at the Department of Education, for example, yeah, or people at the EPA or what have you. And that's his way of getting rid of the swamp, is closing down some of these agencies. And again, I'm not asking you to like that, but the motivation for how he's doing it and why he's doing it might go back to his first term.
It might be.
And if people had handled him a little differently, I'm convinced he would have worked with Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. I'm absolutely convinced of it, that Trump at his... If you got rid of all the things that happened to him and really got down to Donald Trump when he first came into office, he was just a populist. He was not a conservative Republican. But because he made some off-color comments during the campaign that you know, got rebroadcast, and he became this target for everything that people wanted to say was wrong with the Republican Party, they loaded up all of the machinery against him. And I think if Nancy and Chuck had worked with Trump, there would have been gun control. I'm positive of it. There would, because Trump was no pro Second Amendment guy, there would have been a lot of different things would have happened than what has happened.
That's interesting. The hindsight of it. Yeah.
Because he was no Ted Cruz, and he was no Rand Paul, or no Mike Lee, no Marco Rubio. He was none of those things. And those are all like rock rib conservative people that were running for president, and Trump beat all those people. And it wasn't with, you know, I'm going to cut your taxes and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do. It was basically because he was popular, and you know, kind of the way the Jesse Ventura got elected governor in Minnesota.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or Arnold Schwarzenegger, in California. Exactly. Yeah. It was name recognition and basically people saying, let's try something different than a traditional Republican or a traditional Democrat. Let's elect a celebrity. And that's really what Trump was.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing that New York hasn't really done that as well, knowing as many celebrities has come out of, you know, those New York, because they're media hubs.
You know, well, have you heard the chat, Brett, that George Clooney is interested in running for president? So I think this is going to continue.
Yeah.
I could see George Clooney being a formidable candidate.
Yeah.
He's a good looking guy. Yeah. He's a little on the younger side. He's not a product of DC.
No.
He comes from the middle of the country, Cincinnati, Ohio, by the way.
Yeah.
And, you know, him against JD Vance. I don't know, man. You're like, maybe a curveball is about to happen.
I had not heard that about Clooney, and I'm not neither pro or against Clooney. I'd have to hear what he's talking about.
Well, he's not a dumb guy.
No, either. No, he's not. No, granted,
he was strong enough to get Biden taken off the ticket. He had that full page ad, if you remember, in the New York Times, that it was time for the president Biden at the time to step down and let somebody else run, and they put Kamala up against Trump. That was George Clooney, pretty powerful guy.
Yeah, okay.
So we'll see.
This will be interesting. Yeah, exactly. Did you want to do some quick hits?
Yeah, so I just want to throw this out there. I saw in the news where Uber, you know, the, if you will, the national taxi service, Uber.
National taxi
service. That Uber, in case you think I'm talking about the German word that means over, which is what Uber means with an umlaut. Uber announced that they are going to let female customers select where it's possible to match them up with a female Uber driver. So if there is fear of a possible assault or just being hit on or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, their fears are, which may or may not be legitimate. I mean, I have heard that there have been rapes and assaults and things, both against Uber drivers, by the way, and by Uber drivers. So, like, you know, of course, there's good drivers and bad drivers, and there's victims and there's, you know, perpetrators. So I have a couple thoughts about that. So, you know, your gender is an immutable characteristic, even if you have surgery, right? You know, the American Olympic Committee and the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, have now said that if you were born a man or born a woman, that's what you are for purposes of competition. So things have kind of come full circle on changing your gender. So my point is, if you're born a man and you're an Uber driver and you have jobs and income taken from you because you're a man, that's wrong, right? That's wrong. Like, what's next? Can women say that they're uncomfortable or fear a black driver or a Spanish driver or an Arab driver? Or, you know, like, how many immutable characteristics can you tell Uber that you're afraid of, you know, that you want a female? Well, maybe I want a white female, you know. Yeah. I mean, that's wrong. So just, I'm saying, if they're allowed to select gender, well then, you know, which to me is unconstitutional. I think if you're hiring a CEO, you hire that CEO the best, you know, or hiring the director of advertising or hiring a clerk in the mailroom. You don't say, hey, we're only going to hire male ones or only female ones ones.
I was going to say Uber already has, I think, a rating system. So,
wow.
Yeah, in regards
to that, but, you know, that's a great point.
I've not used Uber, but they do.
Yeah.
So you just judge on how well they do, how well they drive.
Yeah.
You.
If a guy's hitting on you, ladies. Right.
Then you get
give him a crappy review.
Right. Exactly.
Come on.
And Uber is going to start not hiring them back or allowing them to be Uber drivers, you would think, after a couple of...
That's a great point. The
rating's already there to do its job. So,
yeah.
And maybe this selection thing won't work. Well, they're also saying there aren't enough female drivers to probably...
Fill this out.
This may be kind of a flash in the pan situation, but...
Yeah.
Or start cranking up your rating services a little bit better, maybe. Better questions. I don't know.
There you
know,
go, really. Uber. Brett.
Yeah.
Brett just solved your problem.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah.
I think denying anybody work on the basis of something that they're born as.
It's got a little slippery slope to it. I hadn't thought about that aspect. I heard that story and going, okay, that's fair. I get the fear. I get it.
By
totally.
Some people. But sometimes your fear, right, is prejudice.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just going to say it. It's prejudice against men. You're lumping all men together because you had a bad experience with a man. And, you know, like you wouldn't do that in any other context. I don't know why you get to do it here. Like if you're going to hire a carpenter, you're going to cross off the names of all the male carpenters because you had a bad experience with a man. It's kind of irrational, if you ask me.
Yeah, yeah.
But fear is irrational in many cases, and I get that. But I don't think that we discriminate against other people based on our fears, because that's unfair.
Yeah, yeah.
It's unfair.
Yeah, right, right. And especially when there's a system in play that should help you weed out and get the best driver for your situation.
Yeah, I don't want a Jewish doctor. You know, because of some kind of crazy thing about Jews. That's ridiculous. That's insane to select people on the basis of religion or gender or race. I mean, we have constitutional amendments that allegedly would prevent what Uber's doing here.
Yeah.
And I think they need to rethink that.
True. Yeah. Yeah.
So my loser.
Yeah, let's go.
I'm
going to
go with the loser.
Yeah, let's do it.
I think Republican Senator Josh Hawley is a total loser for this idea of his. So he has submitted legislation. I heard Mike Carey on the radio today coming in to do on the show. This $600 bill, where they're going to take the tariff money that's gushing into the Treasury, and rather than reducing our national debt with that money, this proposal would be to give every American citizen $600 of the tariff money. Hey, guys, pay down the debt, to do something meaningful with this money. It shouldn't be like a bonus to all the American citizens.
Well,
that we
and
get
it also
check.
It also sends the signal that so you are saying that tariffs are going to increase prices. Is that what you're saying too? By saying, well, we're going to help you because we know prices are going to increase. Here's a little extra money to help out.
Yippee, we got extra money. We're going to give it to you.
Stop
That's crazy.
That. Stop it.
Jeez.
Stop it.
Pay down the $37 trillion debt. That's what's going to kill the next generation.
Yeah.
Their tax burden is going to be out of this world.
Every time it seems as though but there's an opportunity.
It's a political gimmick.
Exactly.
It's a gimmick. And stop this already.
Stop it. Because it seems as though anytime we get an additional flow of dollars, we're making some money here. It's like, and it was targeted to use for this.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. I'm going to score points with the electorate.
We have wiggle room on that one. Well, let's put it over here for this that it was not intended for.
Yeah.
Stop this crap.
Right. Please.
Use it for what it is for.
Right.
And showcase on that.
Please.
You can win elections by just that.
Right.
That you helped reduce the deficit.
Right.
It's giving us $600 a piece is a short-term win.
Yeah.
We have such short-term memories.
You're handing out ice cream cones, and they're going to melt, and people aren't going to remember the $600.
Stupid.
But what they will remember, or the children of, and grandchildren, your grandchildren and your children, their tax debt is just going to be absurd. Either that, or we're going to have to do all those Doge cuts that Elon was proposing and eliminate whole chunks of the support system, the social safety net. There won't be programs to support little, older people for this and inner city people for that and scholarships, Pell Grants, and all this other stuff. It's all going to go away, because we're either going to tax people at like 75% of what they earn, or just whole chunks. Like Social Security won't be what it is now.
Yeah.
It'll be half, or it'll be a fourth of what people are getting. And then you're going to have real starvation. You're going to have real...
Oh, you'll have rioting in the streets.
You're going to have people getting kicked out of their apartment. It'll be
this.
A nightmare.
Yeah.
So
please
spend it to pay down the debt.
Exactly. My
winner, this will be quick. My winner is Sharon Osbourne, who, while grieving the loss of her husband, Ozzy, right, she is putting on an Ozzy parade. So like the final Ozfest, I guess you could call it, is this parade through the streets of Birmingham, England, that she's paying for, complete with a brass band, and Ozzy, Ozzy laying out, as he goes by, and I could just see people throwing black roses. It'll be a spectacle, like Lady Di and her procession. So, Sharon, I mean, it's a wild thing you're doing.
It's a fitting goodbye that the fans will love it.
I can almost imagine Ozzy sitting up and going, hey,
It's good.
Sharon. This is awesome, Sharon. Jack and Kelly, I love you. War pigs.
Exactly. Well, my loser for the week is really a win, but a loss too. Now I'm going to explain it. Now it's a good bad mixture. Now the funding for PBS and NPR going away, and I'm going to spin this in a different realm than most probably are thinking of. Yes, they don't want to spend the money to help support this media. Get it? I understand your concerns. I understand the problems with that. But I think it's an opportunity for PBS and NPR to really crank up what they do and do even better news coverage. I mean, we're complaining left and right that news coverage is horrible. it's one-sided, this, that, or the other. So I think PBS and NPR have an opportunity to really crank up the what's called a value for value model. So they're run by donations. Already they've seen their base go up by 20,000 donations and millions of dollars. That's exactly what it should be done. And once you take the handcuffs of the government off of you to how you operate as a business model, now you can do lots more things.
Yeah, be what you want to be.
Be what you want to be. Yeah. The value for value model is huge. It's that if I see you're worth $100 a month, I'll pay $100 a month and do what you and I have skin in the game on what you're doing.
Yeah.
They can lead the charge with this and actually be a totally different news model and a programming model than anybody's ever seen. It's an opportunity to get away from the overlord of the government. Basically, I mean, they've complained about this forever. It's like, now's your chance to really run with it. So again, it's a win-loss. I get it. But in the long run, I think NPR and PBS are going to be much stronger because of it. And the win for this week, hey, Ohio, you're going to enjoy a expanded sales tax holiday starting August 1st to the 14th, especially kids going back to school. That's what it's covering. It's going to cover more than just school supplies. It's tangible items. Priced at $500 or less, that includes clothes, electronics, even pet food, are tax free.
Yeah, aren't a lot of PCs now under $500?
Yeah, yeah.
Could get a pretty nice laptop or something.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
tax free.
Yeah, so take advantage of it. I mean, it was I think initially when it first started like over a weekend. Now they're pushing it for 2 weeks, August 1st through the 14th in Ohio. Go gangbusters.
Wow.
Save some money now that, our sales tax have actually crept up in certain areas. Boom. Take advantage of it,
I have to express my ignorance. So it's not linked to schools anymore?
No.
It could be like a set of tires?
Well, I don't know how far this goes. I think it has to be somewhat school related.
Okay. Tagged.
Tagged. China. But clothes. I mean, you got including clothes, electronic. I don't know how the pet food is tax-free.
Maybe you're getting married. That one. Wedding dress.
I don't know. I don't know what's going on with that one. definitely for who it's for. Parents who are feeling the strain. Back to school stuff is expensive. Kids want new things because it's always nice to have a new pair of shoes and some new clothes going back to school, new backpack and stuff.
Right.
Take advantage of it. And as well as if you're in the donation mindset that you're just like, hey, you don't have any kids anymore, but you still want to, help out. It's a great time to go shop and donate to local charity that give out this stuff too.
Oh, that's a great idea. School supplies, and then you take them down to the local food pantry.
Exactly.
And have it distributed to impoverished families.
Right.
It was so they can get school supplies that notebooks, pens, calculators.
Yeah.
Just drop off 40 or 50 things and let the local food pantry distribute. That's a great backpacks.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So go for it. Go for it.
Oh, that's great.
Exactly. Exactly. Cool. Good deal. Well, hey, again, as I said at the beginning of the show, you like something you heard on the show, let us know. If you didn't like something you heard on the show, let us know. Let the world know. Share
plug it. Glenn, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. And thanks to our sponsor, Harper CPA Plus. Glenn doing a fantastic job. Now, we've talked about this before, too. Really quick hit for him that, if you didn't like what happened at the beginning of this year in regards to taxes, how your business is run, I mean, we're now at the end of July. And you're going to start making some moves to help your business do better with this. The tax, especially with the BBB, the big beautiful bill in play, that man and his staff and everybody there at Harper knows exactly what's going on. Once the details are out, they're on it. They are on it. They've been promoting that they are on it to help you as a business grow more efficiently and understand what you can or can't do. The guy's it, man. And we've got his connection in the show notes, but Harper Plus CPA. Great people to work with, seriously. So now it's time to jump on it. And we will be back next week. Thanks for joining us this week.